screen, and interview candidates all in the same place. To find your next great hire, visit Indeed.com/credit.
I have only 5 words for you. From my cold, dead hands.
It's time for Gun Radio Utah. No apologies. A show dedicated to preserving and protecting your constitutional right to bear arms for your security and sport. Here's your host, well-known gun rights advocate and chairman of the Utah Shooting Sports Council, Clark Apogian.
Welcome, welcome to Gun Radio Utah. No apologies. It's always nice to have Moses start out the show by saying, "From my cold, dead hands." Anyway.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh,
you went there?
That's Casey Jane. That's Casey Jane in the house.
Hey, hey, hey.
Casey Jane is in the house and actually in studio right now.
And there are no apologies.
Yeah. Well,
whatever we talk about, there's nothing to apologize
for. Mostly that goes for me. Mostly that goes for me.
Oh.
It's like a do-over.
Yeah,
you get a do-over every time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that the voice you just heard is Ken Matthews. Ken Matthews with MedicUp. Ken's been a friend of Gun Radio Utah for quite a while, and we've been a friend of MedicUp, and we're going to be talking. I asked Ken to come on. In fact, we've got another guest, Brandy Vega, who's big in the film industry. And, yeah, we're going to be talking about the Alec Baldwin shooting on the production set, movie production set of the movie Rust in New Mexico this last week. And we're going to get some insight from Ken as to that kind of a thing. But when you hear from Ken, you're going to realize he's a shooter. He's a SWAT guy. He's a medic. He's the kind of medic that jumps out of helicopters no matter what's happening in the worst kind of weather, the best kind of weather, not knowing. I mean, am I right? Not knowing what the injury is, it could be anything.
Right, and usually it was a swan dive. It was unplanned swan dive. In my case, generally, when I jumped out of those helicopters,
with a parachute or
no,
what?
No, I'm kidding.
Okay,
they'd land. We'd get out, go find our patients, okay. Sort them out, stabilize, and then pack up and head out.
So we're going to be talking about what you can do on a hike, and what kind of things you can do in a car if you're injured or somebody else is injured, or at a shooting range, or in a case like on that movie set. And so I'm going to be talking about that, and then we're going to have Brandy Vega in the second segment talking about the kind of precautions that she has to do, because she's got a movie studio and she goes out on location all the time with all sorts of different things, and some of them involve firearms. So we're going to be talking about that. But to kind of bring you up to date, so Alec Baldwin, say what you want about his, I really could care less about his politics for this whole thing, because it, I just don't think it makes any difference. And he was an actor on a movie set that it was a Western, and he had a gun, and he fired that gun. And from the information that we have right now, and that we don't have the exact information, but it sounds like it was a revolver, probably a single action firearm. And at some point, a loaded live round got into one of the chambers in that cylinder. And I don't know how many other live rounds were in there. And he pointed the gun at least at or in the direction of, I don't know if it was on purpose or not, the director of photography and one of the other crew, and fired that gun. And apparently it was a surprise to him when the gun went off, and it wasn't a blank. It was a live round, and it hit the director of photography in the chest. And sounds to me, because a lot of people say, well, how many rounds were fired? Because two people were shot or injured. And when you've got a round, I'm figuring it was a 45, maybe a 45 Colt, which would be typical for that. But it could have been something different. They had many different kinds of period single action revolvers. But it sounds like, to me, it overpenetrated and then on its way out, hit someone else.
It'd be nice to get all the details at some point to try to backtrack and go backwards and see where the loopholes were missed and where things fell through the cracks there. Because nobody wants that to happen, but it's not the first time, and hope, you know, unfortunately, most likely won't be the last on a movie set. You think of Brandon Lee and, you know, going back and back. There's been several of these.
You have to do after-action reports.
Right.
And with an after-action report, you must have all of the information. And right now, we're just struggling. We're grasping to find out, how did this happen? Where did this, you know? So... Because yes, I have worked on movie sets. I've worked on movie sets as a weapon handler, or as sometimes they call them, an armorer, and so on and so forth, and worked on movie sets. And I got to tell you, if I have control of that movie set, if I'm the weapon handler, I do have control. There's no apologies whatsoever. If I say something goes, it goes, or it doesn't go. And if not, I'm gone. And then they're left without a weapon handler, and they can't do the movie because they don't have the insurance for, or they, right. They could do the movie just without guns.
Yeah. There's got to be a line in the sand.
Yeah. 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 And I have, there was a set where it was all very quick, but somebody did bring live ammo for a scene, and because they couldn't find the inert ammo. And I said, and they went to their car, and magically all of a sudden they had this live ammo, and they actually gave it to the actor. And
on a set you were on?
On the set that I was on, and they threw it on the ground because that was part of the scene.
Oh, geez.
To throw it on the ground to load. And I don't care what it is. You don't use live ammo. The live ammo does not. Not only do you not use it, it's not allowed within the set. On the set, in the, you know, anywhere. And I said, I stopped. I had to look at the ammo, and I says, "Well, this looks a lot like real ammo. It has a bullet, it has a
powder in it,
and it has a primer. And even if it had a primer and no gunpowder, still, that's not allowed." Right. And I said, "Not only is the ammo off, but whoever brought this ammo, I want them gone. I want them gone. I want them off the set for any time we're using guns." And they said, and they balked at that. "Oh, they'll just put it back." I says, "Well, it's either them or me." Because that was it. Because my butt's on the line. It's not. If they had picked up that ammo and accidentally, you know, shot it or something like that, somebody had been injured, who do you suppose they would have looked at?
Yeah, you.
Looked at me.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so it sounds like that has happened. So, Ken, there had to be a violation, not just one violation of the safety rules on that set. But let's go over the different violations that had to have occurred. At least I count three, that any one of which might not have resulted in a death or injury. Am I right?
Right, right.
So the first one, I'll throw out the first one. Live ammunition on the set.
Yeah. Who was checking? Who was responsible? How come that gun didn't get checked before his handoff to Alec? You know, there's dozens of questions.
What's the second violation? What's another violation? Oh,
pointing it to something you're not ready to destroy.
Yeah, pointing it,
right?
Yeah.
Pretty simple. Yep.
Because even if there had been a live round in it, and it wasn't pointed at somebody, but then what was the third one?
Finger on the trigger.
Finger on the trigger, and not just finger on the trigger, but pressing that trigger. If any one of those things had not occurred... Live ammo on the set, pointing the gun in the wrong place, pressing the trigger. If any one of them had been taken out of the equation, we wouldn't have had a tragic accident. Right. And so that's kind of the way it is with safety rules, is that basically you have to violate at least two of them to get a problem. And that's just the way it is. I mean, and the classic two are muzzle direction and trigger finger.
Right.
So anyways, when we come back, we're going to have Brandy Vega on, and we're going to be talking about... conditions that she sets, that she requires on a movie set, and that type of thing. And because
gig, go to Xfinity.com. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Protecting and preserving your constitutional right to bear arms. It's Gun Radio Utah. Here's your host, Clark Apotian.
Welcome back to Gun Radio Utah. No apologies, even for you, Casey Jane.
Yay!
There are no apologies.
Should we say there are no apologies when we're at home and I do stuff, like break your guns?
Yeah, don't
you
touch my guns.
You break his guns?
Yeah, stop touching
my guns. He claims I do, but I don't.
So anyways, we're joined in the studio, of course, by Casey Jane.
Hey, hey, hey.
And she rocketed here from the east.
From
in
the
her Mini
basin.
Cooper.
I didn't see
Was
any.
Snowing on Daniel Summit?
Almost, yeah.
Almost.
It was a rain snow mix.
Yeah.
No skinwalkers, though.
All right. That's good.
Yeah.
And joined also by Ken Matthews with Medic Up. If you want to get some, well, Ken, I got to tell you, I mean, I know you do training. In fact, you do training at Legacy, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you do training at Legacy. So we have to ask you about that in just a sec. And just literal, I mean, you can get the medic kits and everything you need. But we are joined right now by Brandy Vega with Brandy Vega Studios. What's the whole name of your that thing?
Vega Media Studios.
Vega Media Studios. Brandy, you have been in the production both in front of and behind the camera for many, many years, and you have a regular studio in Salt Lake, and I'm seeing big things. I mean, you've got big projects going on there, but you also do stuff outside. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, I've been doing video production, media reporting, and all of that for 25 years now.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got green screen work. You do commercials. You name it. So. I know you've done work that involves firearms on the set, firearms being handled by talent or actors. Do we still call them talent? What do we call them now?
Either talent or actors.
Okay. I always hesitate to call them talent because that's presupposing that they have that. Anyway, so what do you do? Hey, what do you do, Brandy, when there's a gun on the when a scene calls for a firearm to be used on the set? What kind of what goes through your mind? What do you do ahead of time? What do you do?
Well, first, let me start by saying that this has shaken up the film community. It's broken a lot of hearts, and I know several people who actually worked with the DP. On productions in the past, in this community, you know, everybody's just really shaken up. It's been bothering me too because there were so many things that happened that never should have happened. I mean, it's just completely avoidable and heartbreaking that there was so much negligence on this set. You know, I just read an article that stated that the AD, the assistant director, handed Baldwin the firearm, which there was an armorer there. She's 24 years old. This is only her second film. She said she was nervous to do this project. And it seems like every possible thing that could be violated was violated, from who touched the firearm. Because when we do it, you have a weapons expert who's there. They're the ones that touch it. They hand it over. They're the ones that touch it again. They clear it multiple times. We follow the basic safety rules. Never point at anything you're not willing to destroy. In production, you cheat a lot of angles. I mean, we've done commercials for Glock, for Browning, for a lot of other firearms. We did a defensive handgun DVD. We did defensive rifle. We've done a lot with both inert and with ammunition, live ammunition. And you cheat angles because at the end of the day, safety is the number one most important thing on the set.
So when you're saying cheat angles, when a scene calls for the actor to point that firearm at another person, they're really not, even though it looks like it's happening, they're really not. They're fudging on the angle, so it looks to the viewer that they're pointing at them, but the way the camera's positioned, they're not. They're not pointing the gun, right?
Absolutely. No. You will never point a live firearm or even a fake firearm with, you know, the dummy rounds at anything you're not willing to destroy. So have we pointed at the camera before? Absolutely. But you set it up, you put the camera down angle, the firearm is down, nobody's touching the firearm, it's not pointing at anything, or you have a replacement. You know, you put something there that is not a firearm, not a weapon, and definitely not charged in any manner. And then you'll set the camera up, and you hit record on the camera, and then you move away if you're shooting close or in the proximity of it. Because again, no shot is worth risking somebody's life.
I know that and that you've been there too when the media will come out, because you used to be with the media too. Media will come out and they'll want to get a, you know, it's a gun story, and they'll want to actually have the cameraman go downrange and watch as you're pointing a gun. And and that usually the reporter is saying, okay, they're directing the cameraman, okay, I want you to get in front of the gun. He won't fire it, but, and I say to the cameraman, no, it ain't happening. I don't care what the scene calls for. And the cameraman is always very happy to hear that I've got his back or her back.
Well, exactly. And you and I have been teaching for a long time. You taught me, you're the best of the best, but we know you know the four basic gun safety rules. You treat every single firearm as if it's loaded. You treat every single one as if it's live. You don't point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And look, you know your target and what's behind it. He shot not only the DP, he shot the director. And so there was just like multiple violations upon violation that led to this completely unnecessary tragedy.
So what happens if you're on a set and you find that somebody is reluctant to follow the rules?
They're off the set. You warn them once, and if they don't follow the rules, they're gone. Shut it down, get them out. And here's what really ticks me off, Clark. I just get more mad the more we learn about this. And you know the details are unfolding, and you're only getting half-truths here and there from people who probably don't understand it. And we also know Alec Baldwin is anti-gun, anti-firearms. And here he is, the one who did something like this. Like, he was in charge, too. So between him, between the director, between the safety handler, between the AD, like, there's going to be a million fingers pointed. But several people walked off that set prior to the shooting because they said it was unsafe.
Wow.
So when you have people...
This is new information. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, there were at least three or four people, camera people and others, who said, I'm not working on... They had at least two accidental discharges during the filming.
That's huge. Now, that's right there. If that had been my... If they'd had was it with an actual bullet, with an actual cartridge, a loaded cartridge
That's what they said. That would have been it. But that would have been... They said they had at least two ADs prior to this. Two accidental...
That would have been it.
Discharges.
That would have been...
And you know, you and I, there's no such thing as an accidental discharge. There's only negligent discharge.
Hey, did you tell me also that the assistant director grabbed the gun off a cart and handed it to Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, the assistant, the first AD, handed it to him and said, it's cold.
Yeah, assistant directors do not handle guns. Armorers and weapon handlers do that.
It should only be between the weapons expert, the weapons handler, or armorer, handing it directly to the actor and then back. And it should be checked before and after. It was just, again, a gross negligence on everybody's part. But and we're still hearing mixed things come in and out, and I don't know when we'll get all the details, but I even heard somebody say that he was screwing around when they wanted to redo another scene, and they said, hey, we're going to need you to do this again. And he jokes around and says, I'm not doing it again. I'll just kill you now, and shot them, not knowing that it was loaded. But then reports say it was an actual loaded, a live 44 round. So, you know, whether that happened or whether it didn't happen, we're just getting mixed reports. But here's what we do know that did happen. Two accidental discharges. Multiple people walked off the set prior to the killing because they felt it was unsafe. They felt that they were just being negligent and that they weren't following basic safety rules and guidelines. And so they had walked off at least three people and at least two ADs. So you're telling me, you know, that whole set should have been set down or shut down way before that.
Brandy, how do people find out more? Let's say they have a production, you know, for their business or for their, you know, for some side hustle or something like that they've got going. How do people find out more about your studio?
You can get more information on my studio at VegaMediaStudios.com. You can find us on social media and just look out for me, Brandy Vega. But, you know, I do want to say one thing too, Clark. Several of my friends did work with this DP, and they're upset. And the film community, they want to know, you know, what's the difference between having a dummy gun or a real gun? Because some of these things, you know, we don't know. But our job, and I produce a lot of commercials and a lot of projects, our job is to find the people who know this stuff. So bringing you on the set, you've been on plenty of film sets. You know, there was a lot of negligence. So I would just say anybody who's doing production, looking to do production, you have to bring in an expert, not somebody who's green, not somebody who's going to cut corners, because you know what? It could be the difference between life and death.
Well, you know what? That's a good question. I'm going to cover that in the next segment. And so we've got to take a break right now. I'm going to cover what is a dummy gun, what's a prop gun, what are they
at untuckit.com. Use promo code TIME for 20% off your first purchase at untuckit.com.
We're not just going to let you walk out of here. Who is we, sucker? Smith and Wesson and me.
Gun Radio Utah. Your host, Clark Apotian.
Welcome back to Gun Radio Utah. Still no apologies. We're joined here. Big thanks to Brandy Vega and Vega Media
Studio.
Thank you. I knew it was VMS. Uh-huh. Vega Media Studio. And her expertise in that. And, yeah, we're going to answer those questions. Prop gun, dummy gun, blanks, not blanks. Is it a real gun? Blah, blah, blah. That kind of stuff. And we're going to answer that. And we're also joined by Ken Matthews with Medic Up. And Ken's been there, done that, from a helicopter, from, fire lines, from multiple victim shootings to getting them into that stabilized, getting the helicopter and all that. And how do people contact you on Medic Up?
Medic Up, we got a website. It's a Wix Meds website. And then my personal phone number that's also the business number, 801-209-1071. And then the current classes that we're doing is out at Legacy Shooting Center. So on their website.
Hey, they're one of our sponsors.
Hey,
Legacy
look
Shooting
at that.
Centers in West Jordan. Yeah.
In fact, I think we met those guys a couple of years ago in this studio, and that's where we kind of launched the idea to do classes out there. And they've got an awesome classroom. Great place.
I want to talk briefly about Legacy. I want to talk about the Gunsmith, because I need to do that right now. The Gunsmith at Sportsman's Warehouse, also associated with one of our sponsors, and Sportsman's Warehouse and Legacy. So if your spouse has gotten a hold of your gun and messed with it, broke it, scratched it, it doesn't work the way you want it to, or it doesn't look the way you want it to look, get it over to the Gunsmith at Sportsman's Warehouse. Now, you can take it right down to them, and they're located 1630 South 5070 West in Salt Lake City. That's 1630 South 5070 West in Salt Lake. You can give them a call at 801-304-8070, 801-304-8070, or better yet, you can take it into any of the over 110 Sportsman's Warehouse locations and take your gun in there, tell them, get this to the gunsmith at Sportsman's Warehouse and have it fixed, and they'll get it done, and it really doesn't matter. I'm having a lot of custom stuff done to my guns, and including Cerakoting, engraving, restocking, you know, all sorts of stuff. They can do it with whatever's wrong with your gun. And you've got, Ken, you've got classes there at Legacy. Talk about the classes. How can people find out, and what do you cover in these classes?
So basically, we're trying to give you some a good foundation or a good refresher or just some additional scenarios to work through. I've had everybody from physicians to 14-year-old girls come through the class. And it's kind of sharing of ideas, sharing of experiences, and some foundational work on the things that will keep you alive.
So we're talking medical-type classes.
Correct.
Emergency the down and the dirty, the actual yep. type stuff.
Ditch medicine.
Ditch medicine. Why right. do you call it that?
Because we're not in a sterile environment out in the real world. We're not in a clean place where, you know, we're all masked up and gowned up and everything is perfect. We know where every piece of equipment is. It's all laid out. We've got a lot of assistance. We're out there on the side of the road, or we're out on the side of a mountain.
Or at a gun range.
Yep, I've been on several gun ranges when negligent discharges have happened. One when I was going through post. So you just never know. The good thing is it doesn't usually happen, so we can be complacent.
So I see these kits. You can see these kits online. It's like a 300-piece medical kit. And I'm pretty sure that I could do brain surgery with that kit.
Yeah,
I mean, it's 300 pieces.
Right. 299 Band-Aids and an aspirin. So you knock yourself out with that brain surgery, my friend.
What should people do if they want to get training? Should they get the kit and then take it in, or what do you recommend as far as training and the med kit?
So you can do a lot. I mean, there's a ton of stuff on the web. There's a ton of things on YouTube that you can Google and find out how to use this or that or how to manage stuff. Nothing's better, in my opinion, than hands-on training and actually doing it on yourself or somebody else is even better, because then that adds another angle in it, which we run into with new students and new physicians and nurses and paramedics, that you got to touch people, you got to talk to people, you got to interact with them, you got to calm them down, you got to be calm. So, you know, high-stress environment, that's a pretty big deal to try to manage all those emotions, all the things that are going on, and then focus on what needs to happen and make it happen.
So somebody takes your class. Can they, and how long does this class last?
It's a 6-hour class is our basic one. It's kind of the fundamentals and foundational stuff with some basic airway maneuvers just to keep an airway open. Bleeding control is a big one. fracture management, chest wounds, all those kind of things.
That covered in the 6 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And can someone, if they pay good attention, can they then make a difference?
Absolutely. What we're generally doing, especially in our society, is buying time for the professionals to show up. And sometimes that may be 45 seconds of holding pressure on an artery that's squirting, or a few minutes holding an airway open with just a simple maneuver. And then the big red truck shows up with the professionals on it, and they manage it, and that's their job. That's what they do. They're good at it. And we're really blessed along the Wasatch Front and in modern society have great EMS and trauma systems. So,
okay, how big of a medical kit are we talking, that I'd say I take your course, mm-hmm. okay? And what kind of a medical kit am I going to be what I use, what I bring with me? I mean, is this a huge thing that you roll out and
sure,
put on the table?
Sure, sure. Yeah, the bigger the better, right? I mean, it's all incremental. And the biggest thing is just knowledge. So knowledge will save the day even if you don't have a kit. But a big kit with no knowledge doesn't really help you as much as it could. So there's, you know, a bunch of different ways to look at it. Buy a kit, go take the training, buy the kit, which is best. That's sixes, really. You can kind of do either one as long as you're not getting the 300. If they're naming how many pieces are in it, yeah. That's probably a good warning.
Have you ever taken a look at somebody's kit that they bring to class with them, their med kit,
yeah.
and start tossing stuff out? Or, I mean, what?
In fact, with some pretty good-sized government agencies that should know better but didn't have anybody specifically designated and, call out all the problems with their kit, they either do or don't solve the problem. And then if they haven't solved it, the problem rears its ugly head and bites them right on the butt down the road. And that's happened with some big agencies before.
All right, so how do people, remind me one more time, how do people find out about the training?
So the Legacy Shooting Center's website is a good place to start. MedicUp.wix.com/MedicUp is my website that deals mostly with the training. And then we sell kits. We do the training. And it's kind of a complete package if you want it to be.
Yeah. I got to tell you something. I've known Ken for many years. Not only is he the kind of emergency kind of medic that you'd love to have, He's a gun guy. He's a big-time tactical gun guy. I mean, teaching SWAT and everything. Plus, you're into communications as well.
Yeah.
I mean, radio, not just the old ham radio, but the kind of radios that will go for miles and miles and miles that you have to have a license for, too. And do you do classes on those?
No, not as much anymore. There's quite a bit of ham radios out there that are pretty amazing for, $30, $40 that you can do tons of things that 15 years ago, you'd have to have tons of radios to do. So kind of steered away from that and stuck mostly to the medical and handgun training.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Ken, I appreciate you being here and giving the insight. And I hope people take advantage of it to get the training and get a kit. For me, I think it's best to get the training and then get a kit. It's like when I tell people, they're going to buy their first gun and they're going to get some training. You almost invariably, somebody that comes to class with a gun, their first gun, end up deciding after the class, I'm going to get a different gun.
Yeah.
And, something that's more suited to that, something along those lines. They show up with a Colt single action revolver.
Right.
Tactical pistol class. Or, grandpa's old shotgun for a tactical shotgun class or something, like that.
Well, so, October 30th is the next class. So next
October
weekend. 30. Yeah, at Legacy Shooting Center. And I think we still have some slots. So get on their website if you want and look it up or give me a call at the number earlier, 801-209-1071, and we'll hook you up.
Fantastic. I would ask you to repeat that again, but people can listen to this on podcast on KNRS, iHeart.com, KNRS/media.
We really love you, PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com.
Protecting and preserving your constitutional right to bear arms. It's Gun Radio Utah on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Here's your host, Clark Kaposian.
Welcome back to Gun Radio Utah. There are no apologies, as opposed to, anyways, go ahead, Casey.
I was just going to say, in case you're wondering, BYU is beating Washington State by 1 point so far.
By 1 point?
Yeah, so far we're in the lead.
Yeah. What's the score?
Yeah. It's 14 to 13.
14 to 13, huh?
Yeah. In the third quarter.
In the third quarter.
Wow. So if you could wrap up this show, that would be great.
Hey, wait. Isn't Washington State where the head coach quit rather than get a COVID thing?
Oh, really? I don't know. I think
that's the head coach of Washington State that said, left a multi-million dollar. He was the highest paid public employee in the entire state, more than the governor, and he left his job.
Good for him.
Standing up for your convictions.
I think that's they're playing in Washington, right?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, all right, I think so. All right, so we have been talking about what's happened on that movie set with Alec Baldwin and on the movie set of Rust, where I think it's safe to say Alec Baldwin was handed a gun and apparently it had live ammunition, at least one round in it, and he pointed that gun, pressed the trigger, and it struck one person, and I'm assuming that it overpenetrated and went through and hit another person, and one of those people were killed. So a question has come in. What is a prop gun versus a dummy gun? Okay, a dummy gun, I'll tell you flat out right out. Now, a prop gun is kind of a catch-all phrase. A dummy gun is a prop gun. And I would like to, I don't think there's a really clear, specific definition of a prop gun other than it's any gun used on a movie set. It could be everything from a completely inert look-alike rubber gun, which we used a lot of those on Independence Day, rubber guns that look quite real, and so that would be a dummy gun as well, completely inert. And anything that requires a serial number and an ATF tracking or anything like that is an actual firearm. A blank firing gun is not a gun. Not an actual gun. The rubber guns are not guns. There are guns that have been very specifically designed to fire very specific subcaliber blanks. You cannot put an actual cartridge, a live cartridge, or even a blank, a regular blank cartridge into it. They're very specific type of blanks. And so the chamber won't accept it and that type of thing. And there are other guns that have, I know we've used on the set before, that when you press the trigger, a little light comes on and it tells post-production when to insert the flash, and that kind of thing. They've had guns that are also not guns, but those are prop guns, that fire a little propane burst. And a lot of times they'll have the action actually work with it. So it looks like it. And you can usually tell in a movie if they're using CGI, depending on how high budget the film is. And the higher budget, they're going to use CGI. The lower budget films use real guns. And so if you see the gun firing, but no empty shells on the semi-automatic are coming out, that's your first clue that they're using some CGI or a propane burst type gun. Now, if you're going to fire regular blanks, not out of a blank a specifically designed blank gun only, then it's a real gun. It's an actual firearm. And at that point, a lot of extra precautions have to be taken. And with that, they make blanks. And are blanks dangerous? They have everything that an actual cartridge has to have, except for the projectile on the case.
Powder, muzzle blast, all that gas going someplace, deadly.
Yeah, and a lot of times, depending on the blank, like a lot of the revolver-type blanks will just have a cardboard wafer, a cardboard disc inside the case to create some back pressure so that all the gunpowder burns and to create a louder pop and that kind of thing. And a lot of times in the movies, they'll use what they call quarter load blanks, which is a quarter of the amount of powder, but sometimes not. And you have, generally speaking, the same amount of gas or gunpowder, which generates, the burning gunpowder generates the gas and generates the pressure, as you would in a regular cartridge. If you make muzzle contact, like some people have died, by placing stupidly, messing around, And obviously they didn't have a weapon handler on the set that was paying attention. Messing around putting that muzzle of the firearm against their chest or against their head or something like that. Without being too gross or graphic, whatever that muzzle is touching becomes the new projectile. And then it goes in, you know, whether it's a piece of the skull or a piece of the rib or something like that. It is then forcibly, you know, moved with that thing. Now, at distances, when you're talking, you know, 5 feet or 10 feet, you start to severely reduce the potential for injury. But I'm just saying the potential. You might have an errant, you know, cardboard wad that's still going to leave that muzzle at 1,000 feet per second.
So. It's interesting to hear about her angle. You know, playing with the angles.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and I remember doing that in what they call fudging the angles because, you know, and the movie people, the director and the production staff will always say, oh, no, we need to get this. And the armorer, the weapon handler says, no, not on my set.
Right.
When the guns are out, it's their set. Well, whether they, you know, whether they assert themselves or not, that gun is not going to be pointed. And for the viewer, it doesn't make any difference because they can't tell. It looks like it's being pointed, but it isn't. The angle is different. And so, yeah. Now, what about when those shots that it's pointed directly at the camera, that point of view, POV kind of a thing? Yeah, that happens too, except that at that point, the weapon is definitely checked. The camera is left rolling without a cameraman behind it, and they typically, to protect the camera, you know, the multi-$1,000 camera, they will put up a piece of plexiglass
or something
like that, ballistic shielding on there, it's because there's still no reason for that weapon to be pointed at a person. And we get that a lot. I think probably one of the biggest concerns we had on movie sets was that kind of that fight, if you will, not really fight and that, but the production staff is always in a hurry. They're always behind, or they're always chasing the sunlight, or they want to get the setting sun just perfect, or they want to get, you know, something like this. And when a gun's involved, I'm sorry, but we're not hurrying. I've been known to, on the set, when the production staff is trying to hurry, we purposely go slower so we don't accidentally hurry and make mistakes. And yeah, every time they yell cut, I get that gun. My eyes, or one of the crew's eyes, is always on every single firearm there. They're not watching. I mean, they may have explosions going on, all sorts of stuff, but that's about it. All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening to Gun Radio Utah today. We'll be back again next week. We've got a special, I think Sam Robinson is going to be in here, and maybe Bill, and maybe some other fantastic folks as I take a quick vacation down Mexico way. All right. Ken Matthews, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Casey Jane, collect your dog.